Shalom Aleichem. For Parsha Shoftim, we have 7 Divrei Torah. We're going to start out with a quick overview of the Parsha and get to our Divrei Torah. So, most prominently, Parsha Shoftim talks about setting up courts. That's how it starts. Shoftim v'shotim titen lecha b'chol sha'arecha. You should have Shoftim, you should have judges, you should have those who enforce the police, who enforce the judgments of the court. You should put around your city. That is necessary for a normal functioning of society. So that's number one, Shoftim v'shotim, establishing courts. We talk about the Zakein Mamre, the rebellious elder who goes against the normal functioning of the courts. He insists on disagreeing with a decision of the court. So that's the Zakein Mamre and what happens to him. We talk about a melech, a king. When you come into the land of Israel and you request a king and the various laws as it relates to the king, that is covered in detail in our Parsha. Also, the Matanas Kehuna, the Kohanim, who will be also leaders in Klal Yisrael, and how they have to be supported, because they would not have an independent Parnasa owning lands. They would not own land, so they had to be supported by Klal Yisrael. Nevuah, other leaders of Klal Yisrael, those are the prophets. We talk about the Are Miklat, those are the cities of refuge, if somebody would kill accidentally. And also, we talk about the laws of war, who should go out to fight, and who should not go out to fight. We are going to start now with Dvar Torah number 1, Ki Ashochad Yaver Einecha Chamim. We are now in Perek Tetzayin Pasuk Yutes, talking about judges, that a judge obviously cannot take a bribe. What's the concern here? If you take a bribe, as the Pasuk says explicitly, that will blind the eyes of the wise. Even the wise will be blinded by the bribe. And V'yisalef Divrei Tzadikim, and it makes the just words crooked. It messes everything up. So there's a fascinating story how severe an issue this is, that any bribe can really have a negative impact on the judgment of a judge. So the story is told about the great Rav, the Ohev Yisrael, who was from the city of Papta, and he was sitting as a judge in another city. And as it's done, we have 3 judges, a minimum of 3 judges on a base din, and they were hearing a judgment adjudication, 2 claimants in front of them, a suit between them. And what had happened in advance of this is that one of the claimants, one of the litigants, had bribed the other 2 judges. So accordingly, those 2 other judges, they were fairly in the corner of that bribing litigant. We'll call him the negative litigant, the one who's the crook. So they're fairly in the corner of the crook. And on the other hand, we have the Ohev Yisrael. He was not bribed. There was no attempt to bribe him as of yet. And he held that the halacha is like the non-crooked litigant. And he stuck to his guns, despite the fact that there were 2 against him. He was adamant that the halacha is with the non-crooked litigant. So this continued, and they didn't get a resolution between them, and there was a discussion between the 2 judges who took bribes and the crooked litigant, and they advised that litigant, you're going to have to bribe the Ohev Yisrael, also the 3rd judge. He said he's not subject to bribes. He's not going to accept a bribe. That as a Rav who is pristine, he has his ethics, there's no way he's going to take it. So they gave them the following advice: put the money in his jacket pocket, and he won't know about it. And even that in of itself, that should have an impact on him. And he didn't know what happened. And overnight, he came back the next day. This is the Ohev Yisrael. And he felt that he wasn't as strong against the crooked litigant as he was the prior day. He started thinking, maybe he's right. It could be that the 2 judges are correct, even though he knew deep inside that that was not the case. But he said, something's going on here. Something improper is going on here, but he didn't know what. And he said, I'm pushing off the diunim, I'm pushing off the discussions of this case for the day. And he went and he had a daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, crying. He was supplicating himself to the Ribono Shalom HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please give me the ability to see the emes in this, because he knew deep inside what the emes was. But something was tearing at him. Something was really inclining him to the other side. A number of days later, he actually found in his pocket the bribe that was left for him. And then he understood what was going on, that he had been bribed. He didn't know about it. He didn't know But he understood that that bribe came from the crooked litigants. He knew what was going on at that point, and then he had an understanding why initially the first day of the litigation, he indeed knew what was correct with the halacha, and why he started sliding from that, because he had received the bribe, even unbeknownst to him. But that is indeed what the Pasuk says, and this is what the Ohev Yisrael explained, V'yasalef divrei tzadikim, that when you have that bribe, it will make crooked the wise of tzadikim, the words of tzadikim, it will make them as well unethical, unjust, it will make them crooked. That's divrei tzadikim. Now, why are they still called tzadikim if they're taking a bribe? Because it's talking about the bribe, the type of bribe that tzaddik didn't know he was receiving, as in his example, as in what had happened to him, that they put the money into his pocket, and despite the fact that he didn't even know that bribe was in his pocket, it still had an impact. That's why it says he was still called tzaddik. He was innocent, but nonetheless, his judgment was being skewed by virtue of receiving that bribe. And that's the severity of the issue. Ki ashochad yaver einetza chachamim, nisalef divrei tzadikim, that bribes, even the smallest of bribes, even unbeknownst to the recipient of that bribe, it definitely has an impact on the judgment of that individual. We are now moving forward, also talking about shoftim v'shotrim. It says as follows in Perek Tes Zayin, Pasuk Chav, tzedek, tzedek, tirdov, that you should run after righteousness. That's tzedek. So why does it say tzedek, tzedek twice, two times? The Rebbe Bona Mipshischa says as follows, Redov Tirdov Acharei HaTzedek B'Tzedek. When you're running after righteousness, it has to be that you run after righteousness with righteousness. What does that mean? So it means as follows, that the means that you work on to achieve an ends, the means has to be just as well. Not only the ends. In other words, our view based on this pasuk, tzedek, tzedek, tirvok, tirdov, you have to run after righteousness, is that your tools to achieve an end of righteousness, they have to be just as well. So commonly people say the means justify the ends. That is not correct. The ends do not justify the means. The means do not justify the ends. They both have to be tzedek. Both the end, what you're trying to have as a result, has to be correct, and the means you use to achieve it as well has to be righteous, but tzedek as well. And that's why it says tzedek, tzedek, tirdof, run after tzedek, run after righteousness, and the means that you use, they also have to be bitzedek. We are now moving forward to Dvar Torah number 3, Perek Tes Zayin, Pasuk Chaf Beis. It says as follows, talking about Avodah Zarah, the worship of Avodah Zarah, the prohibited worship of Avodah Zarah, and making items as well for Avodah Zarah. So don't make idols, don't make a pillar that you're going to use, a stone that you're going to use in the practice of Avodah Zarah, in the practice of idolatry. And it says in the Pasuk, look, takim lecha matzeva asher sanei Hashem Elokecha, don't establish for yourself a pillar that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates, despises the worship of Avodah Zarah. So we're going to bring two different klalim, two different principles, and then we're going to explain this pasuk based on the Kedushas HaLevi, Rab Levi Yitzchak Miberdichev. There is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says that this world that we are in is simply the entryway, is the Peruzdol. It is the entryway to get to the world to come. This is not the end. This is not the last stop. This is simply what we do here in this world that will enable us to get to the world to come and to achieve something in the world to come. So this is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Ethics of Our Fathers. It says, Olam hazeh doma leprusdor bifnei olam haba. This world is the entryway as it comes to Olam Haba. Olam Haba is the end goal. Hatken atzmecha beprusdor. What you have to do is prepare yourself in this world, in the entryway, in order for us to enter into the amphitheater. That is where we want to be. This is just the entryway to getting there. So what we have to know is anything that we do in this world is simply preparatory. So when we are involved in things, inyane ha'olam, things of this world, or things that we need, or materialism, we always have to bear in mind that ultimately this is a preparation, and it should be that we are involved in this world, certainly, but for the proper purposes, knowing that it is a means and it is not an end. So that is point number one. Everything is in preparation. Point number two is all the hana'a in this world, all the benefits of materialism in this world is called lecha. for you. What does that mean? For an example, chetzi alachem, when it comes to Yontzif, we say chetzi lachem, chetzi lachem, chetzi lachem. Half of the day should be for you and half for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So chetzi lachem, lechka, is talking about the materialism of the Yontzif, that we should be eating and drinking and enjoying ourselves. So when we have the word lecha, that is for your benefit when it comes to materialism and enjoyment. Lecha, that is you. And accordingly, says the Kedusha Salevi, if we look in our pasuk, it says, v'lotakim lecha matzeva, you should not establish lecha. Here, we're not taking it as literally as for you, as the lecha means the benefits you have in this world, the hana'a, the materialism that you have in the world. Don't establish it as a matzeva, matzeva from the word of something that is permanent for you here. You should not have materialism on a permanent basis and enjoyment on a permanent basis that it's an ends to itself, but we should enjoy, but we should have enjoy it as a means, as a hachana, as something that is preparatory to the world to come. What would be an example when we're eating on Shabbos and Yontif, Shabbos, Onik Shabbos, Yontif, Simchas Yontif? It should be that we're being mekayim the mitzvah by virtue of eating. Not that we want to act as gluttons and simply eat a lot of food and just enjoy the world, but there's a purpose for it and there's a mitzvah that can be achieved. Or eating healthily, that's also a mitzvah. So the prohibition, we would say, or the warning is latakim lecha, when you're having lecha, things for your own benefit, matzeva, don't make it something that's permanent for this world, that is an ends to itself. Enjoy, but enjoy it as we said, that it should be preparatory to the world to come. We are now moving forward to Dvar Torah number 4, Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Yud Ches. It's talking about the king and a mitzvah, an obligation of the king of Klal Yisrael, v'kasav lo es mishnah Torah zos. You have to write a Torah. In fact, there's a mitzvah for everyone to write a Torah. Does it apply nowadays only writing a Sefer Torah? Can you write other type of Torah? And that's a long sugi into itself. When it came to the king, Rashi says, as follows, shtei sifrei Torahs. There was a mitzvah, an obligation for the king to write two Torahs. So he'd have one larger one, and he'd have one that would always go around with him. And the question is, why do you need two Sifrei Torah? Why isn't one sufficient? So the Yalkut David explains as follows. The greater a person is, the greater his abilities, the greater his ego can be as well. And accordingly, when you have somebody of stature that has an official position, the responsibility, the Ol HaTorah, is going to be heavier upon him. In other words, what he has to do is he has to put in more effort to subjugate himself. In other words, he has to watch that ego. And because the ego can become inflated so easily, he has to be sure to supplicate himself and make sure that he is an ana, to make sure that he is not going to become an egoist, but that he has humility. And accordingly, somebody who is a king, that is at the height, he's in charge of everything, it's good to be the king, he has to be extra careful to accept upon himself the yoke of Torah, doubly sure, and accordingly one Sefer Torah, which would suffice for each person, is not going to suffice for the melech. And accordingly, he has the double yoke, the double responsibility, because he's doubly at risk for being a Baal Gaiver, for being somebody who's arrogant, and accordingly, he has to put in much more effort to supplicate himself and his ego. And there's a similar halacha when it comes to the Shmoneh Esrei. There was a halacha that the king would bow the entire Shmoneh Esrei for the same reason, because he has to put in more effort in order to bring himself lidei hachna, to subjugate himself, to make sure that his ego does not take over. So that's the nice explanation why a melech has to have double, he has double responsibility, double risk, and two Sifrei Torah, something everyone should keep in mind, all of us should keep in mind as well. Everyone has an inclination for arrogance or thinking they're better than other people, and that's something that constantly we have to work on each for ourselves, and having in mind this Yisod, just like the king, each of us have to deal with this, albeit and not the same level as the king, but certainly the message that we should take out of that. Number 5, Dvar Torah number 5, we are still talking about the halachas when it comes to the king, and it says, Lebilti rom levavo me'achav, that he has to be careful that he shouldn't become arrogant. This is the same concept that we saw as before. So in other words, the king has to subjugate himself, he has to be an anav, he has to be have humility. And Rashi, the Sifri comments as follows, that he has to be careful to not become elevated, That's internally. You shouldn't think that he's elevated and better than others. However, this does not apply when it comes to Hekdesh, when something is holy. What is going on here? So it goes as follows. If something is personal to the kavod, to the personal kavod of the king, he feels attacked. He feels that somebody offended him so much. Just deal with it. Don't take things out of proportion. Don't take retribution against the person. Don't let it get to you if it's something that's personal. Don't stand up for your rights and don't stand up. I'm the king. You can't speak that way. However, when it comes to something of kedusha, in other words, when it comes to kedusha as kavod shamayim, when it comes to somebody who's misbehaving in a way that doesn't show respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, doesn't show respect to the Torah, that is the time that even a king who's supposed to be calm, and he's supposed to be tranquil and not let things get to him, not things let get to his ego, but it's not about him in this situation. This is what the Sifrei is saying, that he himself shouldn't be thinking that he's greater and he shouldn't react to others. But when it comes to something, this is what the Sifrei, something of Kedusha, if it's something that is sanctity, then absolutely he has to stand up. There's a right and there's a wrong, and we certainly have to stick up under those circumstances for what is right and what is wrong. It's not about me. That's the key here. The king has to know it's not about him, but when it's about Kfod Shamayim, certainly he needs to react and take action. We are now moving forward to Dvar Torah number 6. It says in Perek Chav, Pasuk Gimel, Shema Yisrael, talking about the laws of war. Klal Yisrael, you're going to be going to war against the non-Jews in the land of Israel. And it says that at the time it was called Canaan. Shema Yisrael, atem kreivim ayom lemilchama lo yveichem. Klal Yisrael, listen, you are going to be going out to war against your enemies. And the language of Shema actually means comes together. Ein Shema ela asifa, come together, have unity. And accordingly, the Sfarim explain as follows, that the first condition, the requirement for having nitzachon, for having success in war, in battle against the enemies of Klal Yisrael, is that we have unity, that we have to be on the same page. And I saw recently in the news that a number of the prior former generals or chiefs of staff of Israel came out and said that an even greater threat to the state of Israel today, even greater than Iran, is the lack of unity, the discord that we have internally. And that's exactly what we are seeing here. Shema Yisrael, to have success. Shema is the language of Asifa, is the language of unity together. That is what is necessary to have unity of Klal Yisrael in order to be successful against our enemies. That's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to step in and protect us because he sees we are united. We are now moving forward to Dvar Torah number 7. Famous, when going out to war, there are certain people who are not required to go. There are three who are listed. We're in Perek, Chaf, and Psukim, Hey, Vav, Zayin. So it says as follows, Mi'aisha Shabana Bais Chadash, somebody who built a new house and didn't really get to live in it for the first year. Mi'aisha Sharnata Kerem Velochilolo, somebody who planted a vineyard, but he has not yet redeemed that vineyard. There's a halacha that only in the fourth year can you have, it's called Kerem Ravai. In the fourth year, you have to redeem it, and there are requirements for that. So somebody who hasn't had that, he has a parnas, in other words, he has a vineyard, he has a way for parnasa, but he hasn't benefited from it yet. And that's number two. Number three is somebody who got engaged, a irisin, to a woman, but has not gotten married yet as well. That person will leave the war, go home. Those are things that you should be taking care of. And afterward, you can come back if the war is still going on. Now, the Rambam, interesting, in Hilchas Deos, he brings this, he actually quotes our Pasuk, and he says as follows, Derech ba'alei deya sheik ba'lo adam melacha ha-mefarneset osa b'tchila. He learns from these halachas in war that the way of a ba'ala bai, somebody who has seichel, ba'alei deya, is first what they have to do is they have to have a parnasa. Set up what your occupation is going to be, how are you going to make a parnasa. That's step number one. Step number two is buy a house, someplace that you can live. And step number three thereafterward, after number one, a parnasa, number two, a place to live, number three is that is when you get married. And he quotes our pasuk from going out to war, that these are the three people, the three categories of people that are absolved from going out to war. And the question that many ask on this Rambam is, but he goes out of order. If you look in the psukim, first it says, you have a house. Then it says you have a vineyard. That's a parnasa. And number three is a wife. So that the wife is, they each agree. The psukim and the Rambam agree, but the Rambam switched the order of number one and number two. In the psukim it says, first you have a house, and then you have a parnasa. And the Rambam says, first you need to have a parnasa. You need to have a parnasa. You need to have an income. Thereafterward, you buy a house, and then you get married. So how can we explain this Rambam? The pasuk is right. How did the Rambam come and change the order? So the Chasam Sofer comes and brings a very interesting explanation. When the Torah says, Keshatoro meres asher nata karen velo chilalo, when the Torah says in the second stage, somebody who has a vineyard, in the Torah, that's the second step. First step is that you have a house, and thereafterward it says that you have a vineyard, velo chilalo, it's talking about, and you didn't redeem yet. Truth be told, what's the focus here? The focus is not when do you start having a parnasa. The focus in the pasuk is that you had a parnasa already, but you simply haven't redeemed it. That's going to be in the fourth year of buying a vineyard or planting vines, that is then the obligation of Kerem Revai that you redeem those. In other words, the purchase, the start of the parnasa, the entry into the workforce, that happened 4 years earlier. So in fact, even in the psukim, the focus here in the pasuk is not buy a house first and then thereafterward start having a parnasa and thereafterward get married. That's not what the psukim are saying. The psukim are saying buy a house and thereafterward you're going to be able to redeem your vineyard that you planted 4 years earlier, and then after you're going to get married. So in fact, the Rambam is adhering to the same order, but the Rambam is focusing on number one, get a parnasa. Number two, buy a house. Number three is when you get married. That's effectively the same thing that the psukim say, because the focus of the pasuk is not when do you start having a parnasa, it's when in the fourth year that you redeem the vineyards. That's why it says it second. But truth be told, the parnasa comes first, like the Rambam has it, and thereafterward you buy the house, and thereafterward you're going to be able to redeem the vines that you planted. That's what the pasuk says, and then get married thereafterward. And that explains why the Rambam, in fact, he has the same order of the psukim. He's simply focusing on when you start the parnasa and not when do you redeem those vineyards, as was focused on in the psukim. Thanks so much for listening. Have a wonderful day.